welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message. Okay. I was outside and Nikki came up to me and she goes, just so you know, and no one got up during a 5-minute break, so it might be a 2-minute break. So got it. All right. So today we are talking about culture, and not like cheese, culturing cheese. We're talking about how do you create a culture that's life-giving. And so this is going to be the interactive part of the message, right? Raise your hand if you've ever been a part of a toxic or negative culture. Raise your hand. Dietrich, never? Not even once? I can watch what's going on. Right. So I'd like to hear, how did you know, what did you experience or see or hear when you knew it was toxic or it wasn't good? What? Gossip? Okay. What else? Nauseous? You felt nauseous, okay? Wow. That's heavy. When I finally needed them, they weren't there. Anyone else? So people that didn't know you reacted in a weird way. Is that how, okay? Anyone else? Intolerance? Yep. So there were several circles. Some people had the information. Some people didn't. Yeah? Yeah? Say again? Whew. You're the last person considered. Okay? Anyone else? Okay? For me, one of mine was like, does anyone... I can't swear. I was about to swear. I care. See, I'm a professional. I can stop myself. My therapist would be very proud of me right now. For me, it was like, does anyone know what's really going on? It felt like they were making it up as they go, right? Which is kind of like church, but a different setting, right? Okay, what about a positive culture? What did you see? If you've been in a life-giving culture, then this could be a workplace. This could be a group of friends. This could be your family system. This could be like your job. It can, like, what did you experience or see or hear when you were in a life-giving culture? Acceptance and love, okay? Sarah? Good communication, both good, both ways, okay? People who are not threatened by questions, that's beautiful. A couple more, yeah. Self-confidence, okay? Transparency, okay? What else? Enjoy the what? Enjoying each other's company, okay? That helps when you enjoy being there, okay? Anyone else? Time flew very fast? Yes, okay? For me, it's like I know I'm in a safe place when I feel like I can be myself. And I was just talking with Nikki about, like, I can be awkward. If you've not met me, I can be quite awkward. And when I feel safe and I can be awkward and I don't have shame attached to my awkwardness, I feel, right? I feel really, really good, right? Here's the thing about culture. In the negative ones, it's not like the leaders or the people organizing it woke up, or the parents woke up one day and said, you know what we should do? Let's make life just horrible for people, right? Let's just make sure it's traumatic as long as possible. Right, they didn't plan it out to be that way, but there's probably a series of tolerations. There was probably a series of decisions of where they were focusing on this, and they bulldozed through people because they just wanted to have that goal or that value. And then the positive ones, right? And I'd like to think that we created a healthy culture. I'm one of the leaders of it, so I'm kind of biased. But I can tell you from watching other people who own businesses, other people who are raising their kids with intentionality and circle of friends, and I know a lot of pastors, like, to create a healthy culture takes a ton of time, energy, resources, and work. you have to spend so much energy of clarifying of who you want to be and where you want to end up, and then leading a group of people to get there on purpose. When we first planted the church, we met with a friend of ours, Jenny Birch, and walked through, like, and we helped clarify our values, which are outside in the hallway. And we said, we want to make every decision in our church with these values in mind. And one of the things that we came up with is we said, we want people to experience a good and beautiful God, right? And I spent 2 to 3 years using that word. And if you've been around for a long time, you probably got sick of me saying it. And I still remember about 2 years after, Nita Davis came up and she goes, yeah, Chris, it's really good and beautiful. And that was the first time I heard someone that wasn't on staff like use that word without me prompting, like, hey, Sarah, is it good and beautiful? Yeah, it's good and beautiful. And I remember when I heard that, I'm like, it worked. We got it, right? Because we wanted to create a culture where the idea of a good and beautiful God who has nothing but good and beautiful things for you was prominent. Because when people think about God, they think about church, they don't always think about good and beautiful. So we had to create a culture by doing that on purpose. And it is really, really hard work, but important work. And this is what Romans chapter 12 through 15 is all about. You're welcome. I can make anything about the book of Romans, right? Paul here, in starting in chapter 12, is talking about culture. How do we as individuals and how do we as a community of people, how do we be Jesus-looking people on purpose? And for the next couple of weeks, we're going to be talking all about culture. Because in chapter 12, verse 1, Paul says, therefore, and this is, it's so good, right? If you are like a Bible nerd, it's in these kind of transition statements that have so much meaning, because Paul is saying everything I've talked about for the past 11 chapters. He goes, I'm a big fan of all those things. And Paul talks a lot about the person of Jesus, the life, the death, and resurrection, and talks over and over and over again about having faith in Christ and having the faith of Christ. But Paul gives very little details of what that should actually look like. He doesn't give us a lot of explanation of, therefore, if you're a follower of Jesus, then this is how you show up in a room. He just kind of leaves, like, he's making this case, this argument that is all about the majesty of Jesus. And so he says, therefore, meaning everything he just talked about, he's saying, that's good. But from this point on in the letter, he's telling us, how do we be Jesus-looking people on purpose? How do we create a culture within ourselves and in the community? And for today, we are going to be talking only through two verses. And if you are, I don't know if anyone knows this word, but this is an expository message, which I have not done for a very long time. Dietrich knows what that means, right? It just means you go through like verse by verse. And for the sake of time, we're going through two verses. But these two verses I've heard messages on dozens of times. And I've given a message on this dozens of times. But the thing that I am trying to accept in myself recently is this idea of infinite kindness. Because I gave a message on this probably when I was like 25, radically different than where I am today. And when I was actually getting ready for this message, I'm like, oh, I remember Youth Pastor Chris giving this message that is universes apart. And instead of meeting it with shame, I met it with kindness. I'm like, oh, 25-year-old Chris was a really good dude. And he had some things that were good, and there's some things that he didn't understand. And I'm so thankful that 43-year-old Chris, right, is in a different space. And I'm really excited about sharing this verse with you. So we're going to read the first two verses, and then I'll walk you through it. Chapter 12, verse 1, right there. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God, and this is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, her good, pleasing, and perfect will. So this is so good. Where Paul starts, he says, therefore, in light of God's mercy, in light of God's majesty, in light of God's infinite love, meaning when you see the goodness of God, you can't help but, he says, use your body. And every message I've given on this and every message I've heard, they focus on the living sacrifice. We're going to get to that. Paul starts by saying, because of the goodness of God, because of God's mercy, how do you show up? By using your body. I gave a message, I think it was Romans 6, about embodied spirituality. When it comes to spirituality, when it comes to Christianity, we put such a de-emphasis on our body. We think about our soul. We think about our intellect. And I'm one of those people who love talking about theology or theories, because spirituality can be so in your head, and that's good. But where Paul starts, he says you have to use your bodies, that your body is strong, your body is beautiful, your body is sacred, and your body is holy. And the way that we get to, we'll get in a little bit, where he says like your proper worship is by actually using your bodies. And I love this because Paul is saying, how do we create a culture? By showing up. How do we create a culture of Jesus-looking people? We have to use our bodies. And how do we use our bodies? He says, as living sacrifices, which 25-year-old youth pastor Chris, and I still remember from Bible college hearing a message on this, and they talked about like having like an altar, right? And Paul is speaking to his Jewish friends, and that would be very common, of a sacrifice. And in Levitical law, sacrifices are really strange, right? If you ever read Leviticus, there's a lot of fat, and there's a lot of burning, and there's a ton of blood. Like, blood is everywhere. But in this, in the context, in the time, this is an incredibly progressive idea of sacrifices. Because sacrifices were practical, tangible ways that if Zoe and I were in a fight, or we had a bad business deal, there would be step-by-step ways to make things right between Zoe and I. There was hope. If there's something between my kid and I, or my partner and I, or my parents and I, there was ways that you can bring reconciliation, you can bring life, inclusion, and belonging. And there was specific ways to make things right, which is beautiful. Because if you've ever been in a spot where you didn't know what to do, you felt overwhelmed, you felt shame, you felt guilt, you're like, well, I don't know how to make this up. Levitical law says, well, we know to make things right between one another and to make things right between us and God. So 25-year-old Chris always pictured like the altar of where you'd bring sacrifices to. And I still remember like picturing myself getting up on the altar and saying, all right, God, my body is yours, to be a living sacrifice. Is like, God, you can just essentially like hurt me. Like a sacrifice to me was like, I have to be abused. I have to endure some sort of pain, and that pain is for God. And then I would treat that by going into the world of saying, well, God needs just to punish my body. I have to work 60 hours a week when I was a youth pastor, right? It was like, oh, this is my living sacrifice. I have to like just totally threaten my safety and my, right? This is how I pictured this was worship to God, by beating my body, thinking this is what a living sacrifice is. Like, I'm done with that, right? I've held that for way too long. Instead, when Paul says a living sacrifice, I think to the Levitical law of it was meant to be a tangible, practical way to bring life, love, joy, and inclusion. So using my body as a living sacrifice is I can show up in rooms to bring tangible, practical hope, love, inclusion, belonging, inspiration to other people. That's what I get to use my body for. And Paul says this is true and proper worship. If you want to worship God, right? He's saying use your body for justice. Use your body for love. Use your body to believe people. Use your body to include and help people find belonging. And for me, at least, like when I was researching this, I had like this beautiful moment of worship. Like, this is the kind of culture I want. This is the kind of human I want to be. I want to be someone who's known for showing up. I want to be known for someone who can bring hope to my daughter. I can bring hope to my friends. I can bring hope to the people around me. I can help other people find practical, like, as I Uber as a side hustle, right? The amount of conversations I have, the amount of conversations I have with people about what spirituality can actually mean, people, the most common response I hear is like, I wish I would have had a church like that when I was 13, because they'd want nothing to do with spirituality because of their trauma of their church and their pastor. I can use my body in that car to bring hope and inclusion, right? And again, we're talking about culture. That takes purpose. That takes hard work. All right, so he says, use our bodies as living sacrifices. And then he goes on to, this is so good. Verse 2, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. The amount of energy, when I remember being a teenager talking about the world, right, was always met with like, the world. And the world was like this evil, dark place, right? Right? It's like, well, there's Christians, and then there's the world. And don't be conformed to the world. Like, the world is supposed to be this dark, scary place. And I still remember, like, 15-year-old Chris saying, like, okay, so we're not supposed to be of the world, but, like, we kind of live in the world, right? And all of us have, like, jobs in the world. We can't all be missionaries and church planners, right? So at some point, some of us are going to be painters or teachers or counselors, which last time I checked was, like, kind of the world, right? But there was this pressure to not look like the world. And this can mean, that's one way of thinking, right? That can be further from what Paul is talking about. Why? Because several times that we've talked about in the book of Romans, Paul says there's a wider table for Jews and Gentiles. Do you remember what Gentiles are? Everyone that's not Jewish. that's literally the world, right? So is Paul saying, don't conform to the world? No, he's not creating us versus them. What he's saying is, don't be conformed to the world. Is saying, who do you want to be on purpose? And just don't go along with the flow. And maybe you feel like when you graduated college, or graduated high school, or you became whatever, you felt like you were a real adult, right? I feel like, exactly. I was like 43. I'm like, I guess I have to be a real adult now, right? And you say, well, real adults do this. You're like, I guess I'm going to go do that now, right? I'm going to go smoke meat and talk about World War II, because, right? Like, just because that's what you think you're supposed to do. Paul's saying don't conform to the world, saying you might look like the world. You might end up over there, right? But who do you want to be on purpose? And do that. And how do you find out that is? He says the transformation, right, of the renewing of your mind. Who's ever experienced a transformation before? Right? Was it easy? No, right? It is, can't swear. It is very hard work to find transformation, right? It's not just like one day you're like, okay, I got to work on my marriage. And so I walk up to Nikki and say, hey, Nikki, transform. I'm like, hey, it's all better now, right? No, you have to get clear of what it is you want transformation. Then you have to do the hard work of actually showing up and being that kind of person. So Paul's saying, have this transformation by the renewing of your mind, meaning what? Is Paul saying, Paul now is connecting the mind to the body. We show up as living sacrifices, practical, tangible hope, and that's our proper worship. We find transformation in the renewing of our mind, meaning you have to get clear of what it is you really want. The transformation is when you got sober, right? You at some point had to decide, I can't live like this anymore. So who do I want to be? I have to live like this. And that is hard work. That's a renewing of your mind. I'm going to have a revelation, and I'm going to be this kind of person. And I'm going to wake up every day. I'm going to wake up every day conscious of this is who I'm meant to be. This is my fullest self. This is what worshiping God looks like by me being like this. And I have to be intentional with my mind and my body to create a culture on purpose, which is really, really good news, right? Because I've seen too many people who want a transformation, who want some renewal of their mind, and they want someone else to do it for them, right? It's like, I want to make more money. Oh, sweet. Can't wait till my boss gives me more money, right? I want to be more respected. I want to be like a leader in my community. I can't wait till someone picks me to be a leader, right? In that renewal of your mind, you have to know who you are, you have to know where you're at, and you have to know where you want to go. Because if you don't know who you want to be, if you don't know where you want to end up, you're never going to get there. And how many people can you think of right now that you feel like live a life of tolerations? Live a life of just like, I'm just going to kind of go with the flow. Like, who I want to be, Nikki and I said this a long time ago, one of our values is purpose. We want to live life on purpose and with purpose. And to celebrate my partner, Nikki is one of the best people I know who lives life on purpose. If you walked into her office, she has this whiteboard, and and I love it, right? Because I love nerdy things, right? And she has, not that you're a nerd, sorry, I just insulted you. I'm trying to compliment you. On her whiteboard, it has up for every week, and it has like professional goals, physical goals, relational goals, and a handful of other things. And she writes them out so that she can do it on purpose and with purpose. And she is succeeding in areas in all of her life because she's doing it on purpose. And I love that about you. And it's inspiring to me. So you have to get clear. You have to do the hard work of transformation. You have to renew your mind so that you can be conscious. And what's the last part of the verse? Paul says, then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, her good, pleasing, and perfect will. Right? The amount of tears I've sat with people about God's will. The amount of anxiety and stress of people saying, is it God's will that I marry this person? Is it God's will that I go to this college? Is it God's will I take this job? Is it God's will that I go to this movie? Is it God's will that I have this friend? Is it God's will that I go to Pedro's for lunch, right? People get, it's funny, but it is 100% true. When you live in a world of God's will is like a singular event. It's like you walk into a train station and there's 30 trains and you believe God's will is one train for your life. And you walk in, you're like, well, how am I supposed to know what train I'm supposed to get on? And once you find out, 20 minutes ago, I already left. Right? You been there? The amount of people who view a cruel, monster God that has a will for your life that is kind of maybe tell you a little bit, and you missed it, and you're like, aha, now you get the seventh best life. Aha, now you miss out on this good. People live here every day thinking about God, and the way you think about God matters. God's will is not a singular train. It's not a singular event. God's will. You guys want to know the secret? I should write a book, right? God's will for your life, right? That's like hotcakes, right? Here's the whole book. Is this God's will? Is that you live a good and beautiful life? God's will is that you walk through this earth knowing that you are deeply, deeply loved. God's will is that you flourish. Period. And how do I know? Someone asked this wise person named Jesus, right? Jesus Christos, and said, what's the most important law? What are we supposed to do? And Jesus says to what? Love God and love people. Not complicated. Because the way you love God is by loving your neighbor as yourself. And when I love my neighbor, I'm loving God. And when I live in a place of benevolent love, when I live in a place of infinite kindness, I'm flourishing. Because when I let love lead, right? There's something good and beautiful happening in me and through me. And the world's a better place. That's God's will. So Paul is saying, use your body, living sacrifices, that's worship, transformation, get clear of it is what you want. Because when you get clear, then you can test the will of God. Then you can say, if this is the kind of person I want to be, if this is the kind of culture I want to be a part of, then you can actually evaluate and say, well, does me marrying this person actually help me be a loving, kind, flourishing person? Going to Pedro's for lunch, is that going to help me be a flourishing kind? And the answer is always yes. Yeah, Barrett's like, yes. I know God's will. That is it. Kids, God's will is we go to Pedro's. Chris said it. Right? Then you can actually use your mind, you can use your body, you can use a community of people to test, is this helping me flourish? This habit, this decision, this investment, this job, this relationship, is it helping me be who I want to be on purpose? Which is, I wish someone had told this to me when I was 15, right? I would have loved someone to say, Chris, your well-being is good. And you flourishing is a healthy thing. A living sacrifice, you don't have to beat your body in order to think that's the most holy thing you can do. The most holy thing I can do is be my fullest self. So here's the thing. Last week we talked about salvation. And salvation is the awakening and realizing that you've always been loved and you've always been good. and God has always been a big fan of you. That's salvation. And we talked about, can you name what you love? Did anyone take a dare? Did anyone actually take time and like tell someone what they love? Thank you. All right, there's one. Thank you. I actually had two people text me and share what they loved, and it was beautiful. Today, my encouragement to you is this. Instead of naming what you love, name what you want. Who is it that you want to be? What kind of life do you want to experience? What kind of things do you want to embody? Like, what do you want to be known for? 6 weeks? 6 months? 6 years? 20 years? Because if you can't clarify, what is it do I really want as a parent? What do I want in my marriage? What do I want in my finances? What do I want with my physical body? What do I want in this church? Right? There might be things that you show up the neighborhood church for, or you're listening online, and you're like, wow, man, I sure wish we had a small group. This is Sarah. Sarah did this. She's like, I want to have a small group. I want to go through a book group. And so I didn't go up to say, hey, Sarah, would you ever consider doing it? She's like, I'm doing it. I'm like, awesome, right? Like, I'm a firm believer that whatever energy you want in the world, you have to be willing to put it out in order to get it back. You can call it karma, you can call it the force, you can call it the Holy Spirit, whatever, you put a name on it, right? I firmly believe the energy you want to experience, you have to put out first. If there's something in this church that you're hoping for, that you're looking for, like, you're the church. Do it. If it's a book group, it's like, I want to get together and talk about motorcycles, all right? I want to get together and have a meal at Pedro's after every church, right? I'm giving Pedro's a lot of free advertising, right? Whatever it might be, like, I want to have a community of people. We used to have a running group. That was awesome, right? Or you want to get together and study the Bible. Whatever it might be, just do it. You can come talk to me, and I'm going to say yes to pretty much anything, unless it's like doing lines of cocaine and like burning houses down. Then I'm going to be like, go for it, but just don't put our name on it, all right? We don't need a bad reputation as neighborhood. But like, if there's something that you want in your job, in your health, and your finances, or in this church, do it. And the people I have talked to feel like they don't have permission. People like me don't get to have marriages like that. People like me don't really get to have that kind of friend, especially on the friendships. Making friends is so incredibly hard, and we punish ourselves and we feel shame because we don't have this kind of friend. You are worth that kind of friendship, and you can do it. What is it that you want? Then be it and go do it, because when you do that, you're worshiping a good and beautiful God. So I'm going to pray. I'd love to have you join me in prayer. So God, we love you. I thank you for your holy will for our life. It's not one train that maybe we feel like we missed when we were like 25. That we don't have to live a life of tolerations. But that you implore us and inspire us and even dare us to live a good and beautiful life. And we can do that on purpose. So I pray for my friends who are here today, like what I just said, they feel like people like me don't. I don't deserve. I'm not worth that kind of life, that kind of pleasure, that kind of success, that kind of love. We leave that narrative behind. We leave that story behind, and I pray, God, that we can tell new stories, better stories about ourselves. And will your Holy Spirit like inspire us to use our bodies to bring hope and tangible, practical hope to people, and that we can have this transformation, renewing of our mind to get clear of who it is that we want to be, and that we can dare to actually go and be it and do it. So give us wisdom, give us moxie, give us strength and endurance to live a life with purpose and on purpose. and let our bodies be a form of worship everywhere we go. And we love you.